This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is America on the Road, named best radio show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Honda is welcoming back an old model next year, and it's part of their changing strategy for sales in the United States. We'll have all the details. Spurred by federal, state, and local regulations, car makers have invested billions in electric vehicles, but now they're facing the reality of the market, and the prospects are kind of grim. We'll give you our take on that coming up. On that order, Kia has introduced a trio of lower-cost electric vehicles in Asia as it tries to reach its goal of selling 1 million EVs by 2026. We'll tell you if you can expect to see any of them in the United States soon. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, YourTestDriver.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and of course, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at DrivingToday.com/autoinsurance. That's DrivingToday.com/auto-insurance. I'm Jack Nierad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris is editor of YourTestDriver.com and, of course, our co-host here on America on the Road. Chris, we're coming up on Halloween. Are your kids getting excited about that?
Oh, yes. We have the pumpkins out. We have all the decorations going. And unfortunately, we've already raided all the candy we bought. So we'll probably have to make another another grocery store run. It always happens. I think we always finish our candy at least a week ahead of Halloween, and we're on track this year. How are you guys doing?
Well, that seems like a good thing to do. Have you dipped your hand into the pumpkin and pulled the guts of the pumpkin out? It's always kind of yucky, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to wait a few days. You know, we have nice chilly weather here now, but I want to preserve the pumpkin as long as possible. Plus, my designs are never all that elaborate, so...
You can knock it out pretty quickly, I suppose.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, as your longtime listeners know, Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other, and each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can get the most for your automotive dollar. And, of course, we review a couple of vehicles each week. We have a couple of interesting guests this time around. One way to save money in a car purchase is to buy from an individual. You've probably done that, Chris. I certainly have bought cars through the years from individuals, from private parties, as they say. Now there is a company called Caramel that's bringing the digital revolution to private party sales. So we're going to talk with the co-founders and co-CEOs, Ed Brogerity and Craig Nieheman, and I'm probably slaughtering their names, but they're great guys, and we'll be talking to them coming up, so look for that. You'll probably save some money by using their service if you're going to sell or buy a car. And Chris, tell us about the vehicle you're going to road test this week.
I road tested a 2024 BMW M2, Jack. It's very easy to very quickly exceed the speed limit in this car, and I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Yeah, well, I was driving a car, maybe not quite as easy to exceed the speed limit in it, but you sure get a lot of comfort out of it. It's the 2024 Lexus TX, the three-row luxury SUV. I road tested it on a road trip. I was in Austin, Texas on an event, and I got the chance to drive that. I think we brought you an interview about that vehicle a couple of weeks ago, and I thought I'd give you my opinion about it. And let's dive into the story about Honda. Honda is bringing back the Civic Hybrid. It's going to be produced next year in Canada and then in Indiana, which I believe is part of the United States, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Chris is nodding along. Yes, it is part of the United States. A good part of the United States, actually. I come from Illinois, so right across the border there. Honda has high hopes for the Civic Hybrid. They think hybrids are maybe the answer. I mean, for a long time, Chris, as you well know, Honda was not a big hybrid proponent. Now they've jumped on the the hybrid bandwagon.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. You know, they said this with the, I believe the Accord and the recent CRV hybrids, is that they view these as stepping stones to their electrification goals down the road. And it's a great way to ease the buyers into it. You have a lower price electrified vehicle, you still get great fuel economy, and you don't have to charge. So I think from Honda's perspective, this is, I won't say a win-win, because they're still a little bit behind on the EV curve, but it's a good way to get people behind the wheel of a fuel-efficient vehicle without spending on an EV.
Right. Well, and I'm wondering about the stepping stone thing. I mean, maybe it's the final result, and I'd love to hear your opinion on that. I think there's a lot to like about a vehicle that has a hybrid powertrain. It certainly is very fuel-efficient. A plug-in hybrid will often give you a lot of electric vehicle range without the expense and, you know, the range anxiety of an electric vehicle. What's your take on hybrids going forward as maybe the answer as opposed to the stepping stone?
Well, you know, Toyota said exactly what you said. Hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and a mix is sort of the solution here. And I think, you know, we had this discussion a few months ago. I'm coming around to that way of thinking. You know, the federal government, many others, are investing billions into our charging network and infrastructure. But the reality is this country may never reach a point where every person can effectively or easily own an EV. And I think hybrids are a great way to get to that fuel-efficient mark. Even if you still have some emissions from a gas engine, you're still not burning all that gas.
Right. As I think you alluded to, Honda has high hopes not only for the Civic hybrid, but it's already experiencing great success with the CR-V and Accord hybrid versions. 56% of their U.S. sales of CR-V and Accord are hybrid electrics. And basically, that's the premium trim now. That's the Zooty model. And has the best drivability, and I'm certain that the two versions of the Civic Hybrid are going to exhibit the same kind of qualities.
Yeah, you're right. The Accord Hybrid gets all the goodies, the technical, it gets the largest touchscreen they've ever equipped in the car. You can't get those in the gas-only version. And as you say, the hybrid versions, Honda's done a great job at refining them to the point where they're more fun to drive than the gas cars. So there's really no performance or driving downside to buying those.
Well, as you mentioned, Honda also has major electrification plans, and they're investing $700 million to retool a couple of their plants in Ohio to make what they're calling their EV hub, where these new vehicles will be introduced. We talked about the Prologue, or we had a guest talking about the Prologue, their first battery electric SUV last week. And the interesting thing about that is it's a General Motors built vehicle, but they have plans of their own to branch immediately away from that. That's certainly a stepping stone vehicle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting to see the approach that Honda has taken here. You know, they partnered, as you said, with General Motors on the Prologue and the Acura ZDX. But then we also have this other project with Sony that we talked about maybe even last year at this point in time. But, you know, they're relying on these partnerships to get their EVs off the ground, which is interesting to see.
Well, all of this is happening at a time when maybe the bloom is off the EV rose for a lot of auto manufacturers, or they're facing the stark reality that buyers' interest, well, I think there's a lot of interest. I think what happens after buyers are interested in EVs is they look at the prices and they look at what they could get if they bought a gasoline vehicle instead and go, well, I don't know that what I'm getting from the EV is worth a $10,000, $15,000 premium. So a lot of car companies, Ford and Toyota among them, are maybe tempering their expectations about what EVs will mean to their companies going forward. And that's an interesting point of view, isn't it?
It is, you know, and we've talked about this. It's so funny to think about it. You know, we kind of got the United States, or the, maybe even the world, kind of got the cart ahead of the horse in some of these cases. You know, we're past the point where the early adopters are going to buy the car whether or not, or regardless of the price. And the people that are left are everyday buyers. You know, like I can point to my neighbors who would look at they're looking right now at an SUV, and they're seeing, well, the electric version of this vehicle is, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 more expensive than the gas version, and they have to charge it, and the infrastructure is not that great. So I mean, there are a lot of reasons, that a lot of headwinds, I guess I should say, in the market right now.
Right. Well, let's see if Kia can buck those headwinds with its three small to midsize EVs that it has introduced in Asia and introduced in Korea. And I expect some, if not all of these, to eventually come to the United States. Their naming scheme is pretty pretty simple for their electric vehicles. They have an EV6 here in the marketplace now. They're looking at EV4, EV5, EV3 as introductions. These are less expensive EVs. In fact, I think the EV3 is priced from about $35,000. equivalent, I guess, in Korea. And that those prices kind of have to hold for us, or you know, there are some ramifications to that. I mean, what's your take on what Kia has very strong belief in EVs going forward? What's your take on that strategy?
Yeah, I think, you know, I really hope that we end up seeing some of those models on sale here. You know, we've heard this promise probably a dozen times now, where an automaker says $30,000, $40,000 to start my EV price here. And then by the time it goes on sale, it's $50,000, $60,000. So I really hope it ends up being the case that Kia can bring at least a couple of, you know, sub 40 grand EVs here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that would really be a game changer if we were to start to see that, because as we've talked about on the show, I think we're finding the EV market to be largely a luxury market, even in the mass market brands. And it's certainly at the top of most of their lineups in terms of pricing. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. And of course, Kia's target of selling 1 million EVs by 2026, I mean, we're getting there. We're very close to 2024. I don't think they're anywhere close to selling 1 million EVs. And it's because of what we reported in the previous story. We just haven't seen the demand for them. One of the things I thought was interesting too, Chris, is some of these EVs that they've introduced, that Kia has introduced, use different battery chemistries, and some different chemistry depending on the country in which they're sold. I mean,
yeah, you know, some of the battery chemistries, and I'm not sure, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to go deep into it, but I think some of them are cheaper. Some of them might not be as energy dense or as expensive to produce. So that might be why they're able to reach that price point. I'm not sure what that'll look like when it comes here, if they come here. But I will say that, you know, some of the battery probably has a lot to do with the price.
Yeah. I mean, the EV5 that's going to be introduced in China is expected to have a maximum driving range of 447 miles. I mean, that's way beyond, you know, pretty much anything that we're seeing here in the United States. I mean, it is a different cycle. So maybe it's 400 miles, maybe it's 350 miles, or 380 miles. It's still, that's a ton of range for a fairly inexpensive EV. And again, that could change the game quite a bit.
Yeah, I think anything over 300 miles and sub $40,000 is a big win.
Absolutely true. And when we come back, we'll be road testing some pretty cool vehicles, including the BMW M2. And I was driving the Lexus TX right there in Texas. So stay with us for that. And we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Keith, Jack and Red back with you. And we're so glad you're with us on America on the Road. Thanks for listening to us. And if you like the show, please pass it along to somebody else who might like it. You probably know people like you who like cars and like a car show. So pass that along if you would. And we'd like to pass along some information about some vehicles we've road tested. Chris, wow, you had a cool, cool car this week. Tell us about it.
A real firecracker, Jack. This is the 2024 BMW M2. This car debuted last year and it rolls over into 2024 unchanged, which after my week driving it, I think is probably okay. So you can get the standard 2 Series car for a little bit less than $40,000. My M2, which is the range topping model, with the optional automatic transmission, I'm sorry, standard automatic transmission, was almost $80,000. And if you have any experience, Jack, which I know you do with BMW M cars, that is not a surprise. They are typically around twice of what the base model pricing is. This car has got a twin turbocharged inline 6, 3 liters, is 453 horsepower, 406 pound-feet of torque to the rear wheels with an automatic transmission. And there's an available 6-speed here, Jack, but I want to get your feeling. Have you driven any of BMW's recent M cars?
I'm trying to think, and I don't think I have. It's probably been several years. It's interesting that they are going to automatic transmissions on a lot of these vehicles, right?
Yeah, it's a responsive automatic. It's not as responsive as the dual clutch in my Golf R was, or any of the Volkswagen Audi products, but very quick shifting car. I will just take a step back and talk about the engine for a minute. So it's an inline 6. You don't have a V8 here like you would get in the M5 or any of the other sort of high, full-fat M cars, but this is more than powerful enough, 453 horsepower. The 0 to 60 here, Jack, is just over 4 seconds, which, as I mentioned off air just a moment ago, was surprising to me because my Golf R was actually quicker than this car and around half the price. So, you know, interesting there. But I will tell you that the inline six in this car makes it a visceral, thrilling experience to the point where, you know, if you put your foot down, even in second gear, you're going to smoke the tires. There's just so much torque here, plenty of power, so you're never going to run short of that. What I will say about this car from a styling perspective is I think you either love it or you hate it. I think polarizing is the is the friendly way of saying that. There's some sort of blocky square styling up front that doesn't really mesh with the wheel arches and things. And BMW, we've talked about this, kind of has lost its way from the styling standpoint, but I think if you can get past that, the performance here is more than enough to make up for it. The car comes standard with standard sport bucket seats. My car has the optional carbon package, Jack, and I want to tell you about this and get your opinion. The carbon package brings carbon fiber bucket seats, and these are not just bucket seats. These are sort of very sporty, almost racing seats. The bolsters come up very high on the side. And for somebody like me, not necessarily my 6 foot height at this point in time that's causing the issue, but it's my 200 pound weight where I feel too wide for the seat at all times. I've gotten this opinion from a million people so far. What do you think about these super duper sporty seats?
In a car is this opinion about your seat or about the seat in the car?
The seat in the car, yeah.
Yeah, think, okay. You know, people should not be saying, hey, Chris, you're a little too wide for the car.
I'd say that myself. But.
Yeah, you can say it yourself. Others shouldn't say that. I think it's a possibility. I think the interesting thing about M cars is I think many people who buy them aren't necessarily enthusiasts. They just want the highest grade of a particular BMW lineup. And they're not going to be happy with a heavily bolstered seat like that because it's basically kind of hard to get in and out of and might be uncomfortable for you depending on the width of your derriere, right?
Yeah, I think the carbon package with those seats turns this car into a weekend driver only. I don't think I would want to commute or drive anywhere in this car for more than a short period in those seats. And you're right, a lot of people do buy that. My local Mercedes dealer told me that people come in and buy AMG cars just because it's the most expensive that you can get. But inside, you know, otherwise it's a luxury BMW product. You've got a large 14.9-inch touchscreen, and 12.3-inch digital gauge cluster, wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. You have a full suite of advanced driver aids, adaptive cruise control here, but you got blind spot monitoring, rear cross traffic alerts, and a couple other things. And that may have just been an option that got left off, Jack. I'm not completely sure that it's unavailable in the car. But otherwise, you know, I think it's a super comfortable car. 80 grand's a little steep, man, but this performance is quite tempting. So I think I would go for this car without the carbon package and have a great time.
Yeah. Well, pretty cool car. And again, price, you know, has you shaking your head. You shouldn't shake your head on radio. You should say stuff. There you go. If you got the money and you love it, buy it.
Go for it.
Well, I was driving a more functional car. And I think once people get a good look at the 2024 Lexus TX three-row crossover, they're going to say, hey, Lexus, what took you so long? Why haven't you done this before? And to me, and I bet you feel the same way too, Chris, it's surprising that a brand like Lexus, which pretty much has its finger on the pulse of the luxury car buyer, has taken so long to have a really competitive three-row vehicle of this size, but now they have it. What's your initial take?
Yeah, it's super surprising. You know, they had kind of a flop with the RXL, the three-row version of the RX, but glad to see they finally have a competitor in that segment.
Yeah. I mean, the obvious competitor is the Acura MDX. And I think in a lot of ways, having driven the MDX recently, you drove it very recently, I think tested it on the show. And, you know, I've driven one fairly recently too. I think the TX has a lot of advantages for the luxury buyer, especially the American luxury buyer. The MDX in a lot of ways is maybe a little bit small, you know, for the buyer versus what the TX is producing or going to introduce to the marketplace. It will be available it's actually available now and heavily being advertised on TV too. If you watch any sporting events, you're seeing TX ads all over the place. It's in five various trim levels. I was driving an all-wheel drive TX 500H F Sport. This is the high-performance hybrid version of this with F Sport trim, the in-performance luxury trim. Had a suggested list price of $72,000. They start out much less expensive. I think it starts at about $55,000. And I would suggest that you might want to look at a TX in that range as opposed to maybe this all-in kind of $75,000 version. Although in the overall scheme of things these days against competitors like the Cadillac Escalade, I mean, $75,000 isn't a very high price, is it?
No, the Escalade crests $100,000 in a hurry, so that could be a bargain if you look at it the right way.
Right. It can be configured as either a 6 or 7 passenger vehicle in the 6 passenger mode. The second row has 2 captain's chairs. We've gone over this a million times, Chris, but I always wonder why you get a big vehicle like this to add one seating position to what you could get in a sedan. But I guess there are good reasons to do that. How do you feel about that?
I've always been a proponent of captain's chairs. I love them for kids. I think it makes accessing the third row easier. And you lose a seat, Jack, but the interior space feels, I know it's not physically bigger, but it feels bigger without that seat
there. Right. And you can you have that walkthrough, although getting into the rear seat here is pretty good. And one of the things that Lexus was adamant about when they did the TX was having a real third row that adults could sit in and feel fairly comfortable in. And I both witnessed and did myself getting into the rear seat. I'm a full-grown adult. I'm not going to get any bigger, that's for sure. I might get wider, but I'm not going to get bigger. And it was pretty comfortable. I mean, I'd rather be in either of the two other rows, of course, and the front seats, of course, are super good. But one of the things that I think is interesting about this Lexus TX is the front-end styling. You know, the spindle grille of Lexus has always been kind of controversial, and this is a whole different take on it. It's essentially a body color grill. I think it's one of those things, to use the term that you've used, polarizing. What's your take on that?
I think it looks better in body color than it does as a black monolith on the front of the vehicle. But I think Lexus still has some work to do on their styling before it's less polarizing, to say it nicely.
Right. Well, this was a very comfortable vehicle, nice to drive. It had plenty of power and various powertrains in this vehicle, starting with a 2.4-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine in one of the powertrains, and then adds a couple of electric motors to give you more power. I think it just did a good job of delivering power, and I felt good about it. It handled well enough, at the same time being super comfortable and super quiet. And I think those are the things that are most important to that luxury three-row buyer, I think, more so than the sharpest handling of all time.
Yeah, you know, I always like seeing the performance increase with a hybrid system. You know, back in the day, people always said, you buy a hybrid, you get a boring car, it doesn't really matter. We talked about it earlier with Honda. The hybrid systems in Toyotas, and they're doing a really good job with boosting performance and fuel economy at the same time to make these more engaging to drive.
Yeah. One of the things interesting, too, is they're going to have a V6 plus electric motors in the plug-in hybrid 550H plus. So that should be an interesting powertrain. And then, of course, there is the turbocharged four-cylinder plus electric motors that I described, which is fairly powerful. 366 total system horsepower. So that's plenty of power. All in all, I think they've got a winner here. I think they're going to do really well with this vehicle. I can see why they're so excited about it, and they are. I mean, typically a car company is fairly excited about what they're launching, but the Lexus people are very excited about this, and I think for good reason.
I think they'll sell just about as many as they can make.
Absolutely true, and they're going to make them in Indiana. And when we come back, we will have an interesting interview about private party car sales and a new company called Caramel that is bringing the digital revolution to that whole business. So stay with us for that. Two interesting guests for you, and we'll be right back with them. Hi, this is Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road. I'd like to tell you about my latest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many people have told me it is the perfect follow-up to Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the notorious Hollywood bathing suit model murder case. In Dance in the Dark, Jason Griffiths is a rock and roll drummer turned computer programmer who fears for his life, but he doesn't know why. After living a quiet life for years, suddenly his girlfriend leaves him. He meets the most beautiful woman he has ever seen, and within days, he's wanted for the murder of a drug cartel enforcer, a murder he didn't commit. The cops think he did it, though, and so does the boss of the cartel. So he's stuck between the law and the mob with nowhere to turn. The only person who might be able to help him is the new woman in his life. But will his stunning new companion be an asset or an enemy? And can he escape the desperate situation he's trapped in? Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and as a Kindle ebook at Amazon and at E.M. Lancy Publishers. Right now, it's at a special low price that will save you $5. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad. Thanks for checking it out. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad back with you. And we have two really interesting guests for you, talking about a real interesting subject, kind of that hits home with so many of us. And it's private party car sales. A lot of people buy cars from other people, you know, probably the most popular kind of car purchase that's going on. And we have two guys who are kind of taking this into the digital age. They are partners in a company called Caramel, and it's Ed Bogiardi and Craig Neiman. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate both of you joining us.
Thanks for having us, Jack.
Thank you.
Explain to us, first of all, the size of the private party market for car sales. It's gigantic, probably the biggest way people buy cars, but kind of unquantified. Talk about it a little bit, would you?
Absolutely. Happy to, Jack. And maybe I'll kick off and hand over to my partner, Craig. So you're absolutely right. You know, even when we were digging into some of the studies and numbers, we were blown away by the size of this market, Jack. So if you take some of the most conservative estimates, they pin it around 11 million private party transactions per year in the U.S. alone. We've seen some more aggressive numbers all the way up to 15 million. And just to give you some context there, and you know this better than anyone, Jack, but that's approaching new car sales numbers in the U.S. alone. So amazing to have such a large retail category that's sort of, as you said, used day in and day out, but sort of off folks' radar a little bit.
It's kind of been catch-as-catch-can, right, for people making private party purchases and sales. And now it's a whole different scale of purchase. And certainly we have security concerns that we probably didn't have before, too. Talk about that a little bit, would you, Craig?
We believe deeply in what you just said. It's amazing to us that 11 million plus times per year, someone's buying somebody else's car, and oftentimes they don't know if that person really has good title to it and the ability to get them ownership of the vehicle. They don't really always know how to get themselves properly registered. They're transferring funds today the same way they would have 20 or 30 years ago, often very nervous to do so. And finding the right handoff point between the keys and the funds. If the buyer needs financing or insurance or wants to maybe inspect the car, they're really off on their own to do these things. So you're buying something that has, in many ways, all of the complexities of buying a house, but you're doing it completely on your own. And it's really high stakes if you get it wrong. So we thought that was really interesting. There aren't that many consumer problems left that are that big that someone hasn't said, you know what, I'm going to see if I can maybe help out with that a little bit.
You know, I would say it's even more complicated than buying a house. And having done a lot of these transactions and actually written the book on car buying, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Buying or Leasing a Car, I think it's more complex. And one of the things is a car moves, right? A house isn't going to move on you. That's one thing that you have going for you when you're purchasing a house. Tell our listeners, you know, how you solve the pain points, and then we'll go back a little bit to how you came up with this idea.
Absolutely. So to your point, Jack, you know, one of the things we wanted to do was tackle some of the biggest components to a private party car sale. You know, many folks are accustomed to what it's like to go buy or lease a new car. You've written the book on it. And if you go into a franchise dealership, that's a dealer with a logo, a brand logo, a BMW, Toyota, Honda store. While it might, you know, sometimes be a bit frustrating, take some time, it's actually a really trustworthy process. You're in that store, you know that you're going to be leaving with that vehicle. You can apply for financing on that car. They handle all the paperwork for you. That F&I office will handle title and registration. It's a secure, safe, guaranteed way to transact on a car. So the goal here was, how do we bring that same sort of componentry to the private party transaction? So we're doing all of those aspects as well. We're doing fraud detection. You know, we've got folks, we're scanning driver's license, biometric selfies. We're making sure that both buyer and seller are verified to protect both parties, right? That's one of the biggest components here, removing some of the scam components. On the buyer side, ensuring that we can offer them all these optional accessories that they need. You know, as you said, these days, cars are getting more and more expensive. You know, the average used car price is $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. Every week, we're reading a stat on how these prices are going higher and higher. Most of us don't have that cash to be able to send over a wire or create a check for that price. So offering great, compelling lending options, insurance options, warranty. Would you like to get the car delivered? We've packaged that all up in a digital box, as we call it, you know, in an app or a website. In a matter of minutes, you can go through and quote unquote check out on this car, transact like you would on any e-commerce experience. And the other big component we want to provide for folks is the title and registration aspect, the DMV services. So it's our goal to have you not step foot into the DMV, to feel safe and secure that your money is in good hands, that you as a buyer will receive title and you as a seller will receive the funds for your vehicle. And then really what you want to focus on is the vehicle. You know, if you're going and finding that specialty car, that car you've been looking for so long, you want to enjoy that part of it. You don't want to be fearful of the transaction process itself. So that's what we've put together in a bit of an offering for consumers.
And I think what's interesting about this is you're allowing this to take place on a bunch of different sites and in a bunch of different ways, right? I mean, you're just offering the add-on of Caramel to facilitate the transaction, really, make the transaction happen.
One of the things that we thought was very interesting about this industry is there are so many wonderful places to list your car and to find somebody else's car. And we knew that it would be maybe not the best road to take to compete against some of these really big sites that list a lot of cars and provide wonderful experiences. So we really intentionally wanted to do something complementary because we found that those sites are wonderful at that thing, but thereafter that buy now button, that make an offer button, that complete your checkout button is missing in cars. And when you buy anything online, there's a button to buy it except for a car. And every type of website that we're talking about is hyper conscious of this. They're looking for solves. They're looking to solve where they can themselves and to partner where best. And we wanted to really build something that was as complementary, as plug and play as this industry has really produced yet. So sometimes we kind of think of ourselves as a PayPal button or an Affirm button or a Klarna button that can just kind of plug right on in there. And we've effectively built that capability.
Yeah, which is a great capability. One thing I don't really understand is how you guys get paid. This is a service, right? I mean, there's something in it for both buyer and seller. How do you make money from doing it?
We charge $95 per transaction to the buyer, but we waive that if they select any of our products. And we charge nothing to the seller unless they don't possess the title. So if they have a lien on the car, for example, we charge $95 to take care of that for them. But in relativity, our fees are low. And the reason for that is because we make our money the same way that a dealer, a retailer, would make their money, which is that when we facilitate financing for a customer, when we facilitate insurance, or vehicle protection products. Think about in a private party sale, you really might be a little nervous that the car could break down a month or two later. Well, we have products that can protect you against mechanical breakdown. When we sell those products, the providers that we connect customers with, which are some of the largest insurance companies and largest banks in the country, will pay a marketing fee effectively for us connecting them to good customers.
So it's typically, if people are not availing themselves of those services, it's maybe $95, $100 for peace of mind, and probably the peace of mind, and not being forced to walk into a shopping center carrying an envelope with $20,000 in it and crossing your fingers that the person who you're making the transaction with really owns title to the car, all of that stuff. I think it's probably well worth $100 to get that done.
No, you're absolutely right, Jack. You know, we're fortunate that we've been getting direct feedback from many of our customers, and truth be told, they sort of don't believe that it's only going to be $95. And again, obviously, many folks need some of these products that Craig referenced, like lending, so on and so forth. And then it's waived. And they just don't understand how we're able to provide these title and registration services, this peace of mind. And so they very deeply value it. You know, we've already had repeat customers, and we're a new startup and an early stage company. We've had customers come back and, in essence, vocalize and write reviews for us that say that I'm never buying a private party vehicle without going through Caramel again. And obviously we love to hear that because fundamentally we set out to solve what we think is a big consumer problem. Folks are fending for themselves. This is an issue. And they've now found a process and a services and technology that helps bring that peace of mind you've referenced.
Of course, we're seeing so many cars being sold across regions these days where we didn't used to see that. It used to be very, very regional, but now we're certainly seeing that, and we're seeing that in the specialty car and special interest car categories in particular. So you're probably helping facilitate that as well. Again, let our listeners know how they can reach your site, web address, all that stuff, and then I'll let you go.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Jack. So our URL is drivecaramel.com. And we also have an iOS and Android app as well for those folks that would prefer to do it on their phone.
Well, thanks to both of you, both Ed and Craig. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing this. I think a lot of our listeners are going to take you up on that. I mean, this seems like a perfect way to facilitate a lot of car transactions. And it is a very complicated process, as you both know. So thanks for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on, Jack. Appreciate it.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris C. Jackson. Right back with you. And it is our final segment for the week. I always get a tear in my eye when we get to the final segment, but because I like talking with Chris about cars. Some pretty interesting stuff. This is such a fascinating industry. And we're glad you're with us and staying with us for our America on the Road. If you like the show, please pass it along. We would appreciate that. And Chris, we have some really good questions from our listeners here. So why don't I dive right into those and we'll see if we can answer them. This is from Jim in Passaic, New Jersey. Jim has kind of a long story, but I think we can sort through it. Jim says this: the lease on my 2021 Toyota RAV4 is about to run out, and the buyout for it is $24,000. I think that's too expensive for me, so I'm wondering if I should lease a Kia K5 or Toyota Camry. I thought I'd ask the auto experts, what should I do? What should he do, Chris?
Well, I don't know what the mileage or the residual value, if I could speak right, isn't that big of a deal. $24,000, Jack, I'm having trouble reconciling this. I don't think I would recommend jumping into another lease right away here. I don't know that you'd be able to find, again, I don't know the condition of his RAV4, but I don't know that you'd be able to find a low mileage couple year old RAV4 for $24,000 that you know the history of and have been familiar with for a few years. I'll say going with another lease means another down payment. You're getting into another car that you're not going to own at the end of the lease period. And a couple of years down the road, you may end up in the same situation where the Kia K5's residuals feel a little bit too big for you to go and buy that one too. So I don't know, Jack. I think my biggest thing here would be questions about why he doesn't feel 24 grand is doable.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think what he's tripping up on is the whole monthly payment thing, right? I think he's looking at financing that $24,000 and looking at what that monthly payment would be, and then looking at maybe a monthly payment on a lease for something that he would have for the next 3 years. What he's not figuring in is if you buy that $24,000 three-year-old Toyota RAV4, you got an asset. You got a vehicle that probably has a ton of useful life in it, well beyond even the auto loan you would take. And as you say, in a lease, you're going to end up at the end of the lease with nothing. You'll have driven a vehicle for 3 years, which is fine, and a new vehicle for 3 years. Well, it's new when you get it. It's not new when you're done with it. That's certain. So my recommendation would be, if he likes the RAV4 at all, to buy it rather than lease a different vehicle. If he indeed is looking for a sedan, as he appears to prefer a sedan as opposed to maybe the crossover SUV, I'd look to maybe buy them. I'd look maybe to buy the RAV4, sell it,
yeah,
you know, use that as down payment on the purchase of a K5 or Camry. Both are, I think, really terrific vehicles. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And to your point on payments, I'm not sure that a lease payment on a K5, I haven't looked at the specials recently, but I'm not sure a K5 or Camry lease is going to be any cheaper than making payments on a 3 or 4 year loan on a 3 or 4 year old RAV4. So again, I think that he has a few avenues here. I think the last one that you mentioned is probably the best from a financial standpoint, buying it and then selling it for more later or trading it in. But that's, you know, a few more steps than a lot of people are willing to take.
Yeah. I think it just points out that a lot of people aren't really rational about this, or they look at the monthly payment and that's the difference between it's a good deal or a bad deal, right? If it's a lower monthly payment, it must be a better deal than if it's a higher monthly payment. But there's a lot of things that go into that, as both of us
know. When you go to the dealership and they start showing you monthly payments only, that's when you get to start wondering about, you know, where you're going to come out at the end of that transaction.
Right. Yeah. Keep your hand on your wallet in that case. Well, Wilbur in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, boy, a lot of W's there, has this question for us. We're thinking about buying a Jeep Wrangler or a Ford Bronco. Do you like one of them more than the other? Which would you choose?
Whew. Well, I think they're both comparable off-road. I think you're going to get about the same thing off-road. They both have very robust aftermarket support. You can modify them to the ends of the earth and back. I think where you're going to find the difference there is on the road. If you have to drive this thing as your daily driver, which a lot of people do for a $50,000-$60,000 SUV, the Bronco is 100 times easier and more comfortable to drive on the road than the Wrangler, and that's thanks to its independent front suspension. Ford's done a lot of things with its geometry and whatnot to make it easier and more agreeable to drive daily on the road, like I said. And the Wrangler, you know, it's fine. The new 2024 Wrangler I mentioned a few weeks ago is the most comfortable one Jeep has ever made. I still think it is a couple steps behind Ford on the road, though, Jack, and I'd like your opinion on that.
You know, I'm pretty much right with you. I think the Wrangler has come a long way in its on-road ability. I mean, it used to be, you know, two or three generations back. I mean, talk about rattle traps. I mean, you're driving down the road and you think every wheel is going a different direction as you're driving, and there's so much noise, just beyond mechanical noise, just squeaks and rattles and loose lumber is what I think what they call it in the car business, you know, just squeaks and where is this even coming from? It's not like that anymore. They're pretty darn comfortable. And I think Jeep folks realize that most Jeep drivers are going to be on the road most of the time. And so they've improved that. At the same time, I think you're right. I think the Bronco is good in a lot of ways. I would say pick the one that you think expresses you the best might be the thing. You know, a lot of people want to have a Jeep. Which is cool. And I think in my town, boy, I see Broncos all over the place. I mean, it has really caught fire, and I think across the country. So big success for Ford Motor Company. And so maybe the Jeep dealers will give you a better deal on a Wrangler because of the popularity of the Bronco.
Well, and you can get a plug-in hybrid Wrangler as well, and you can't get one of those in a Bronco. You can also get a Wrangler with a V8, which you can't currently do in a Bronco. But I think either way, you're going to join a, and I hate to say it this way, your either vehicle is going to put you in the midst of a vibrant, very active community of enthusiasts that deeply and enthusiastically love those vehicles. So it's an interesting sort of move either way.
Yeah, yeah. So find your team, join it, and participate. Well, here's a question from Diana in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're thinking about buying an electric car, but we've heard you two talk about the lack of charging stations and the fact that some of the time they don't work. How can we tell there are good charging stations in our area? Really good question. I wish I had a really good answer for this one.
I have not actually thought about this. You know, when I look at the apps that are available in my area, granted, as I've mentioned this 100 times, I live in a small town. I think my metro area has about 30,000 people in it. We have probably five, I think, public chargers in the region. There's no way to know. I mean, I've been to some of them where they say the app says they're functional. You get there and it's not functional. Or the app says it's available. You get there and someone's already plugged in. So, I mean, I think other than doing some scouting and maybe some, you know, independent research, checking out the apps, going to these places yourself, eyeballing them, and then seeing maybe about installing a charger at your house, I think is the biggest thing here. If you're able to do that, those will make your EV ownership experience, or they will ease you into the EV ownership experience more than just buying one and hoping for the best.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about EVs, right? I mean, nobody has to do scouting to figure out how many gas stations are around your neighborhood before you go out and buy a gasoline-powered car, right? But it really kind of makes sense, especially Diana didn't say, you know, what her living situation is. Maybe a single-family home where they can charge at home a lot. But if you're living in a condo or apartment complex or something like that, you might not have the ability to charge at home. And then you're totally at the mercy of public charging from two standpoints. One is just availability, but also there's cost. And the cost of public charging is a lot more than if you're charging at home. So those are two things that, if you can, scout them out. What I would maybe do is ask other electric vehicle drivers in the area what their experience has been, because there's really kind of no way to tell, is there?
Yeah, it's such a frustrating situation. And sometimes, you know, I compare this, and maybe even on the show, I've compared this to the streaming TV battles so much. You know, they all said streaming would be the sort of end of cable. And now what we have is 15 streaming apps with all their different things. And now we have 15 or probably more than that different charging companies, brands. Each one has its own app. Each one has its own charging and payment network and things like that. So if you can't charge at home, I think, you know, scouting is your best bet to figure out, sort of navigate some of this to get going. And then that's even before you start taking road trips and planning for long distance travel.
Yeah. I mean, just getting it to work around home is the first thing. So tell us what's going on at yourtestdriver.com, Chris.
Yourtestdriver.com is gearing up to bring on some new writers and some new content. We're going to have review content, lists, and some more safety related things. So Your Test Driver is focused on family friendly guides. We're helping you guys get into cars that are safe, that are affordable, that are going to get you where you want to go reliably. And then we also do rankings for EV charging, EV towing. And so we try to create these things so that we, you know, give you the information you need to go out and buy a new car or a used car. And we're still running the giveaway for Skip Barber Racing School and Team O'Neill Rally School. I'm not going to go into all the details there, but just check out the website, yourtestdriver.com, for all the information.
Yeah, please go there, yourtestdriver.com. Tons of great information. Check that out. Please check out my newest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime thriller. It's inspired by true crime. It's available at Amazon in both paperback and electronic ebook form. So look for that. If you like America on the Road, as we say, please pass it on to others. Listen on this radio station each week and then let others know where you listen to the show and what time it's on. That's helpful. It's not on 24/7, but it is on 24/7 as a podcast. And it's pretty easy to get an America on the Road podcast, isn't it?
That's right. If you head to sportsmapradio.com, you can find America on the Road on the Saturday morning schedule. There you can find our podcast on all the major platforms. As Jack mentioned, we're on 24/7, 365 days a year on Spotify, Apple Music, and others. And then you can also find a formatted radio version of the show right there.
All right. So subscribe to America on the Road, and you'll get it in your mailbox somewhere, and we'd appreciate that. Thanks to the Sports Map Radio Network stations for carrying America on the Road. And most of all, thanks to you for listening to America on the Road. You're the reason we do what we do, and we're thankful for you being there. So join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. Inner peace, self-respect, emotional fulfillment. Are you finding these worthwhile goals difficult to achieve? Are you looking for success and satisfaction in your job but not finding it? Are you thinking about starting a business but don't know what will set it apart from all the others? You can continue to struggle on your own, or you can unleash the undeniable power of the GR Factor. I'm Jack Arnierad, host of America on the Road. For years, I've found success in business and in my personal life by using the concepts I outline clearly in my book, The GR Factor. Your best self is inside you right now, just waiting to be unleashed. Inspiring all that is the best in you, the GR Factor will guide your journey, elevate your game, recast your relationships, and transform your daily life. If you want to change your life for the better, read the GR Factor. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at emlancey.com. That's the GR Factor by Jack Arnierad. Thanks for checking it out.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.